And part of doing that, I would like to recognize any guests. If you would introduce yourself. And I think we only have one with you, Rick.
Good morning. My name is Rick Moore. I'm a civil engineer. I have a firm that's based in Tallahassee, Moore Bass Consulting. We work with folks to help them position and develop real estate. And it's great to see all of you virtually and look forward to a time when we can all be together in person.
Absolutely. And then our TALCOR representative, did you want to introduce yourself as well?
Sure. Stephanie Chalet, property manager for Innovation Park with TALCOR.
Okay. Well, very good again to have everyone here. I'm glad that everyone is staying safe in this virtual environment that we have now all embraced and taken on. So we do have a robust agenda. We'll likely not need all of the time that's allotted for, but we do want to honor the schedule. So Ron, are there any modifications to our agenda?
No, I do not.
Okay. Is there any public comment? Okay. Recognizing that there is none. Then we have by virtue of our agenda, and I don't see Christina that she's joined us yet.
No, she has not. I did speak with her last night. She was planning on being on the call.
Okay, well, no worries if it's okay with everybody else. As part of this whole conversation, board members, that we're looking to create and build is as we go into our strategic planning session, not just today, but as the conversation continues, I wanted to make sure that we brought in subject matter experts that could weigh in and give us insight as we have these planning conversations, and one of them being certainly Rick Moore. Absolutely. Great voice in our community and contributor. So Rick is actually going to talk to us about the land planning, geotech, and pad ready site development. So I would welcome any questions that any of you may have along the way, but Rick, if you don't mind, you can take it away.
Great. Again, I will work to this through the technology, attempt to share a screen, got a very brief PowerPoint presentation, and hopefully this goes off. If not, I think we have a plan B, right?
Yeah.
There's good. Always a plan B. Yep.
All right. Sorry, I got people texting me, emailing me. I'm just trying to hang on 1 second. You should be able to. Wait a minute. Here we go. I'm gonna go ahead and turn that on. Sorry.
Yeah, as long as you've granted co-host ability. Should be able to share.
Actually, we have it set up so all participants can share. Are you able to share now, Rick?
I am muddling through. Give me one.
I understand.
1 second. There's enough screen points.
I don't think any of us are going to go out and start a Zoom consulting business on how to do this as a subject matter expert. So you are in good company.
Ron,
very good company.
If you don't mind, can you just show from where you are?
I can. Let's do that. That was the point of the backup.
Thank you. So the slide deck is brief. It's about 15 or 16 slides, and it really serves to parrot a presentation that Ed Murray and I had the opportunity to provide addressing about 600 acres of real estate related surrounding the airport and the positioning of that property. So we can go past that screen if you don't mind, unless I can go next. Just I feel like most of you I know, but for those of you who I don't, just a little validation of as a firm. We deal in land use engineering and permitting. We have now 58 employees, but a number of engineers, surveyors, landscape architects on staff. And so looking at real estate on behalf of owners or boards of organizations is a fairly normal place for us to practice. If you can go to the next slide, please. If I was sitting in my office, I would be in front of these four screens, which would be much easier to manipulate than the Apple computer that I'm sitting in front of now at home. And if you'll go to the next slide, please. We'll start with what you know. This is a familiar map. It was provided by Ron early on, but it was it became the basis of just a quick look at your real estate and the responsibility of the Board of Governors to address. It's a color-coded map, and the color coding, as best I could glean, was the garnet was FSU property, the orange was FAMU property, and the tan color is the LCRDA property. So that was kind of the orientation that we ran through. If you can go to the next slide, please. Some of the, this is a little extraction of the data table that showed up on the document, but it basically summarized down to 16.9 acres of undeveloped property under FSU, 17 and a half in the orange column for FAM, and then 29 acres held by the Development Authority. Next slide, please. So this is, again, I do better in looking at map views and aerials. It's obvious that the undeveloped properties are in a mixture of cleared and wooded, it's pretty clear that the level of intensity of development of the parcels that are developed are likely the intensity, the same coverage that we would hope to have, I think maybe you would hope to have on the undeveloped tracts. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So we've represent a number of properties through the industrial site selection process. Both April Salter, who I saw entered a call, and her firm, Moorbass Consulting, we both have done representation work for Weyerhaeuser, who has taken, if you believe their marketing materials, which I do, they're the largest private land owner in the world, and they've positioned their property that was related or that was proximate to rail, interstate, bulk power, and workforce into a study and development mode. We have a 2,600-acre industrial park project in Columbia County, Florida, and a 2,000-acre industrial park project in a place called Dublin, Georgia. We've probably represented between 75 and 100 prospects, all of them codename projects through DEO, and the rhythm of those deals has really started to gel. Can we go back yet to the different players that are involved in this land development or in this site selection process? The first bullet, in the yellow, the site selection consultant, we've given them a new nickname. They're the site eliminators. They are almost looking for reasons because they have 10 prospects that get through the filter. They're looking to simplify their life and kind of narrow and winnow down the number of prospect sites very early in the process. And on his team, this would be somebody maybe from Deloitte that would come in, and they would have their own real estate specialist. They would bring in financial modeling people and workforce people to probe to understand what the status of the local workforce is. But in addition to that, there may be the guy who is the real business owner, and that he's got a team of operators and managers below him. And then even farther down, there's a money guy who may not be the facility, the business owner. He may just be a owner of the constructed facility, work with a financial arrangement to build to suit. So there's a group in the yellow box that seems to fly into town, needs to be picked up at the airport, trotted around the community, and treated pretty much like royalty. But that's that yellow team. The blue team seems to be the landowner, the representative, and he may have a consulting team that he brings along with him. And then in some of these communities, there is the pre-positioned rapid response team that really has all of the folks that can answer the questions that seem to be pivotal or critical to the decision-making process as these site selection folks come to town. So next slide, please. Any questions on the players? Okay. So one of the threads that happens, and this really the set, ready, go quote kind of resonated, may have been picked up even in some of the local press when we had the conversation about the industrial property adjacent to the airport. It really was born of Ed Murray's kind of research and reach out, and this is post-Greenville, with other communities that were in the market of landing some of these job creation site selection folks. And so we recognize that these guys, when they come to town, deal in three currencies. They deal in time. That seems to be the most important dialogue and conversation, and it's one that we can propose some solutions to shorten, but they are looking for the shortest possible time. And I've tried to outline that there's approvals. If you can conjure approvals within 6 months, if you can build down to a 12-month construction timeline so that they're up and operational in 18 months, these guys are concerned about their changing market, their numbers. I mean, everything that they do to justify a purchase is tied to time of delivery. The money side, I'm not saying that it works itself out. It's an important element, but first costs end up being tossed into one bucket, and then the recurring costs of that escalate, that are labor, utilities, taxes, enter into the conversation. And then they will monetize their access to labor pool. They really, we're finding these guys, when they come to town, they want to cluster near somebody who does something like what they do, sometimes for a synergy, sometimes to rip off the employees of another firm, or be able to recognize that there are already people that are trained, and then it kind of drives labor costs, but they present and will make a decision. Tire manufacturers will cluster near other tire manufacturers in hope of finding an educated trained labor force. The certainty of outcome piece is something that I think I was looking at the constituents of this Board of Governors, and I think you guys have, you know, made that commitment to project connectivity across all layers, kind of vertical and horizontal, on the regulatory and governmental side of the community. But whether it was the chamber trip to Nashville, the chamber trip to Greenville, that projection of strong community leadership and community alignment is important. It may take a little dress rehearsal from time to time and a tabletop exercise with a fictitious prospect to really decide where additional work can be done to drive that alignment and communication. But time, money, certainty of outcome are all worthy investments to kind of articulate and simplify for a site selector when they come to town. Next slide. So there are different communities based on their amount of risk capital, what their capital sources are. Some communities have in Georgia, they call it a SPLOST, a special purpose local option sales tax. And some of that SPLOST money can be set aside for economic development. And sometimes economic development comes in the form of local government or development authority acquiring property, pre-permitting the work, actually leveling a piece of property without building a spec building, but to accelerate the ability to construct a spec building. And then some go as far as actually building a spec building so that it's available when it comes time for a prospect to come to town. There's obviously a risk of building the right thing in the right place. And so you have to really have some intestinal fortitude, some wisdom, and some inside information. Doesn't hurt either, trying to build the right thing. But you really can, as you start to try to trim time and really contribute to certainty on all three of the currencies, do some documentation of the property that's available, how developable it is, you know, the confirmation that it's zoned right, how we deal with transportation and stormwater specifically, and then kind of the ease of permitting. If we were going to tank any project that was going to move forward in Tallahassee, if we were going to make sure that any project in Tallahassee was going to advance, we would want to make sure that we had zoning and buffering resolved. We want to make sure we have traffic and stormwater. And if I can get kind of the compatibility and I can get traffic and stormwater resolved, most projects can advance through the regulatory process without creating risk or too much headwind. Next slide, please. So these are a little bit of drill down detail. Ron has this deck, and I'm sure he'd be happy to share it with you. This is a high level view. We haven't done any professional representation. We haven't done all of the work we would ordinarily do on a project, but there are questions that you can ask that I think are reasonable. One of them is, with three owners in the park, are you all well coordinated as a prospect comes forward so that you don't allow one group to leverage against another group? I mean, there's some kind of unified principle. You guys probably have all that worked out. It was just an idea in my mind about what would be a complexity when I saw that map of getting played against each other. Occasionally, I know there are special use restrictions that may be established either historically or in real time. I remember a research component being part of a conversation about whether folks were the right kind of people to land their development in the park. Guys are going to just want to know and understand very specifically what the terms of lease are. I went through and looked at the ownership in the park, and it looked like they were almost all in governmental ownership with the exception of Danfoss. At least it showed up on the tax assessor's map as they were a fee owner of their site. But being able to articulate, communicate duration of lease, basically you're just building comfort in the financing arm of whoever is taking a look at this thing. Covenants and restrictions, whether they are in place and articulated, and then the rest of these are, you know, professional property owner association, those kinds of things. But the ability that you actually control the land and you can describe everything about that land to a buyer is important. Next slide. Then there is, this is kind of the pocket where the pocketbook starts to hurt a little bit. You could make a decision in advance of a prospect coming to town to advance the same due diligence on your for sale property that they would have to do as a prospect or a buyer. And so each of these line items, each of these bullets is from a pretty standardized checklist that they would be using, that they, your prospects would be using to confirm that the piece of property they're looking at doesn't have a hidden gotcha in it. They will be looking to basically cast off any risk of advancing and then getting stopped by something. And so each of these due diligence studies is important. And so that's I would advise anyway that you can spend your way through this list and develop a document that brings a level of comfort to a prospect. Under the zoning certainty, I took a quick look at the zoning of your park. It's a PUD, so a copy of that PUD readily available for review, that you understand what's in that zoning document, PUD. You actually have a M1, a piece of straight zoning M1 parcel of the out parcel that's in the northwest corner of the holding. So you have a couple of different zoning categories that you need to be able to be fluent in. Next slide, please. So this is it was just a spot of the zoning map, the kind of, you'll recognize your park area that is kind of in a purplish tan. That's your PUD zoning. And then there's a parcel in the upper left-hand corner that is yours. There you go. Thank you, Ron. That's zoned M1. That's a light industrial zoning. Next slide. So transportation is a conversation, and all elements tied to transportation becomes a huge listener, listening post for some development interests when they come in. They've been surprised at the end of a project with a transportation impact fee or a concurrency fee that was unexpected. It's kind of a huge budget item, and being able to wrestle that down as an early piece of data is going to be helpful for any prospect. I don't have firsthand knowledge. I would suspect that there may be some vested status of this project because it's been around pre-adoption of the comp plan. It may have some history that's out there where this is a real easy answer, that it's very affordable because there are no transportation concurrency fees. If that's the case, certifying and documenting that would seem to me to be a something you could do to put your piece of property at an advantage as it was being considered by a development interest. The last bullet is Airport Gateway Project. I know there'll be some coordination interface. I would think that we would be highly supportive of that project, and that there would be, you know, arguments about improving access to this piece of property that could be made, but just staying in coordination in support of that project, I think would be a, if you were my client, that's a piece of advice that I would give you, that there was probably a lift for everybody for staying engaged and connected with that project. Kevin, do you have any thoughts on that?
Other than I agree that that's a pretty substantial piece of infrastructure that's going to impact this area. I think you captured it.
Okay. So as you access, operational turn lanes, traffic signals, anything you can do in advance that continues to add value to your property, I think as early as you can get engaged in the conversation and as specific as you can be in the documentation to a prospect is going to be beneficial to you. Next slide, please. Stormwater and utilities. Again, this is a subdivision that's been around for a while. There is a master stormwater plan. There is a master plan for stormwater of the entire Southwest campus for Florida State University. Documentation and articulation of exactly how easy it's going to be to get through that process would be a lift. But instead of having them, the prospect, come through and excavate and be an archaeologist and find old documentation and figure out where they sit, having all that packaged up and ready to go early on, really as a in your go bag, in your ditch bag, would be something I would advise, if you haven't already done, to do. Permitting and construction is the last of these slides. You know, you can wade into this water about as shallow or deep as your budget allows you. I mean, you can map out what the permitting process is without actually filing for permits, or you could actually file for the permits to clear and grade and level the developable portion of the property, and then invite your end user to actually position his building and parking within that flat and leveled land. So you have the ability to conceptually deal with it, to actually permit it, and then to permit and implement a pad-ready graded site if you're inclined by budget and mission to do so. So next slide, please. So this is probably the most dangerous slide in the deck. And so I would just ask you to recognize that this is an estimate, but I'm trying to do something to give you some sense of order of magnitude. For the 29 acres, you probably could invest a couple thousand dollars an acre and end up with your due diligence done on your property, documentation that positions that property as a fully vetted. In other environments, we actually deal with certifying agencies who look at our due diligence data and give us a McCallum Sweeney certification, or a Georgia Ready for Accelerated Development certification, or a CSX Rail Select Site certification. I don't know of any certification that we should seek, but this is the same exact information that you would pull together if you were certifying one of these sites. It's in the vernacular of the site selectors, and you may have to field a question: is your site, has it ever been certified by a certifying agency? So this is the same content, a couple thousand bucks an acre to get the kind of documentation and content you need to be able to answer questions. If you were going to clear, and grade flat pads for a truly pad-ready site, I think your estimates are that these days that if you were going to finish out the horizontal work, the civil engineering stuff on the site, you could plan on spending about $250,000 an acre. That's paving, grading, drainage, pipes, sewer, water, but it's everything but the building. I think we spend about 60% of the 250 because we aren't laying down paving, we aren't doing utilities, but to clear and grade and level and then stabilize a site so that it's truly pad ready for an end user. So really just trying to give you a sense of what the scale of some of these investments could be. Obviously you could take one or two of your parcels and choose to do it. You don't have to do all of this. I would do all of the due diligence at the same time. And then you could choose to wade into the water with a pad ready site, again, based on a budget need, mission, those kind of things. So that's, I guess next slide, please. So again, if you were my client, what I would probably suggest that you at least consider is that collect an inventory, all of the existing data and studies that you have. I'm sure they are spread over a 25-year continuum of this development site. Figure out where your gaps are and initiate the work to fill those gaps. Figure out how to produce an up-to-date data repository so that with a click and a drop, you can put this piece of property into play. If there's an expression of interest, you can almost answer the questions before they've been asked and they're in the same language that site selector would be looking for. Be mindful of the things that change. If you had done this 5 years ago, you might not have had the same conversation about the airport gateway. And you maintain lines of communication with stakeholders. I mean, you just want to keep the bogeys to a minimum, the surprises to a minimum as you're prosecuting the war effort here. Let's go to the next slide, please. If you were going to take a big step beyond what I have one as next step, this is the big step. You could identify a logical phase and ready a pad for to receive a structure. Again, that's a big lift. That's where the real money is spent, and it is what some industrial parks and projects are doing to advance their competitive edge. I think that might have been the last slide. Yep, and there's your map again. So I'm happy to answer any questions for you, and thanks for your time.
Rick, I want to, before others chime in, just want to thank you for the time that you've invested in pulling this all together. This certainly is a priority of the park and looking at how we establish a level of readiness. So thank you for your effort in that, and would welcome any board member questions at this time.
Well, I'll start it if it's okay. Rick, this is Kevin. Understand that the stormwater in and around this area is very complex. There's different basins and sub-basins, and all of the water generally runs down towards Orange Avenue. Do we have, are you aware, or is anybody on the LCRDA board, or Ron, or do we have a stormwater plan already established for the park? And do we understand the opportunities and constraints inside of that plan?
So the stormwater is identified in the PUD in terms of what's, you know, what lots have stormwater allocated to it. I think most of the stormwater issues are around the western part of the park. So lots 1F and 2F, for example, I don't believe have any stormwater allocated to it, as well as the out parcel. The out parcel is kind of on its own. We looked at that as part of Project Juggernaut. And there's some discussion about, since they're also looking at lot 4E, about somehow joining or expanding the stormwater pond. If I can get my, there it is, in that area right there. So But everything else has stormwater allocated to it. So I'm not sure, the other than this area over here, which drains into this ditch, I'm not sure what other stormwater areas we have challenges with. And I take that back. I think there may be some issues with these parcels down here for FAMU. But in terms of the areas that we have to develop, this area here, I'm not aware of any stormwater issues other than, like I said, the allocations for this.
And so the impervious limits are established in the PUD for each, for LCRDA, FAM, and FSU, each, all the parcels?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
So, Kevin, what I would do in drilling down a level farther is to document that and then have the city of Tallahassee cover it with an acknowledgement. I mean, you would go as far as whether you're going back and referencing a valid operating permit that has a capacity allocation record, but really just so you don't accidentally end up with a hiccup, hearing a different story another level of caution that gets delivered when you talk to your local government folks, kind of get that documented and affirmed as a part of a package, even if it's on a lot by lot basis.
Yeah, and I will say that the documentation of the stormwater allocations and those allocation records are not as clear as they could be. And I definitely think there needs to be some work done there. Even when we've done development for Danfoss, we've had to go back and look at other projects. And there's an obligation on the part of whoever's developing the lot to update those records. And we're not always clear on, and the records are with the city, so we're not always clear what's been done there. And the historical records, you know, if you make a request to the city to get that information, usually you get a data dump of everything that's ever been done on that property. So I think it's something that we can definitely do some work in advance to make clear, as Rick said, to make sure there's no hiccups in that.
Good. Thank you.
Kevin, thank you for asking that question. Board members, I cannot see you all on my screen because of the screen share, but if there are questions, Anne, do you have a question?
Yeah, and Rick, thank you. That was excellent. I think most of this we sort of know, but we haven't pulled it all together in quite this way. I have the same kind of question about the traffic. I think that is potentially a pretty big thing if somebody substantial were to come to us. Maybe we're fine on that. I just don't know. Does anybody know?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. In the development agreement that we have with the city, it identifies some vested traffic. But again, it's not as clear as it could be in terms of what's actually there. And again, to avoid any hiccups, I think we need to do some work to make sure that's clear and documented by the city.
Yeah, every time I drive in on Roberts Avenue and look at how sort of constrained that looks with the railroad on one side and, you know, that being a pretty major entrance for Danfoss back there, I think, this is not going to be great over the long term, you know, unless something can be worked out. So
we would drive the traffic conversation into two, well, my fingers disappear when you put them in, into two buckets. One of them is the regulatory bucket that is dealing with concurrency and what the certainty of outcome is. How easy is it to calculate? What's the number? Can you afford it? That would be one. Yeah. The other is operational. I mean, and Ms. Longman, that's your perspective. Can you really get folks in and out based on shift work, based on deliveries, based on whatever it is, how functional and operational is it? And both of those viewpoints, I think, are valid approaches to traffic.
Yeah.
Again, another great question. Any other board members with questions regarding Rick's presentation? Again, Rick, I want to thank you for your time and your expertise, and thank you for sharing the slide deck. We will distribute it to the rest of the governors. You can stay with us, or you can capture the rest of your day.
I'm going to wish everyone a good rest of the day and look forward to the time when we can all see each other in person. Thanks.
Absolutely, Rick. Thank you again.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Week, Rick.
And it looks like Christina Paredes, Director, Office of Economic Vitality, has joined us. And Christina is going to provide us an update regarding OEV activities. So, Christina, I'm glad to have you here, and take it away.
You are muted. There you go.
Thank you so much for having me here today to provide you with an update on our OEV activities. We'll all start with kind of a macro level and then boil down to some of the conversation that we had the last time I was at one of your meetings with the project update. So we've been watching our statistics very closely in weight of the COVID-19 pandemic and what that means as far as business recruitment and local business expansions. So I'll start at a high level with our unemployment rate and what we know about that right now. So in our metro area, our unemployment rate for April is 8.1%. That's one of the lowest metro areas for unemployment rate. Gainesville's next at 8.9, followed by Pensacola at 12%. When you look at us across the state and across the country, our 8.1% is well below the state average of 12.9 and 14% for the U.S. So keep in mind that April had that first full 4 weeks of pandemic effect on the labor market. So that's what we really saw there at that peak. And our percentage increase in our metro area, although it is bad, it's not quite as severe as the statewide or nationwide. So, and that again goes because when you look at who our major employers are across our community, they're with the state, they're with the universities and education and healthcare. So we were able, didn't have as large of a hospitality industry as the rest of our state. So that's shielded us a little bit there with that. So most recently you saw the release of the March sales tax numbers come out. We don't have that money that here locally driven down detailed yet, but across the state you're looking at a 24% decrease. I mean, that's mostly due to tourism and hospitality related industries for the month of March. That obviously is a trend that we expect to see when we get the local collections here and able to analyze that data. I do want to note for you that our January number sales tax locally was down lower than we anticipated to year over year. So we expect a significant decrease. We don't know how much at this point in time, but again, that state was at a 24% decrease. This will, as you can imagine, impact the Office of Economic Vitality's budget as well. And we have a budget workshop scheduled with the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency to talk about those impacts and seek policy direction from that board. And that'll be on July 9th. But when you look at construction projects across our community, you're still seeing that. We have about 52 projects under construction right now. So bottom line, when you look at our local economy, we expect a downward trend, but it's still too early to tell how long it will last and how significant it will be. So those are just some things, some cautionary measures to consider as we move forward and still collecting the data. I know we're sitting here in June and it's been, 2+ months. I think we're almost on the third month. I'm losing track of time, but that date, collecting that data and assessing that impact is something that we're still doing, and it's still a little too early to tell. Obviously, the decisions that the universities make as far as back to school will also have an impact on our local economy, and something that we're working with and pulled together a group of stakeholders to really have that conversation. The next thing I'm going to talk about is some news that we're seeing across the state. Just this morning, I heard that Turbis Tumblers, everybody loves a good Turbis Tumbler, their large facilities down in Sarasota, they are selling that facility and looking for a smaller footprint, strictly because they realize how remote working has worked and can downsize their real estate as a result of that. I think the facility that they have down in Sarasota is like 120,000 square feet currently, but they're looking to downsize that and send some people to remote working. So you'll see more companies make that decision, we can anticipate. In our community here, one of our largest sectors is financial and professional services. So what does that look like as these companies make those decisions? When we did our business impact survey back in the end of April, 1st of May, 12% of our businesses responded out of just over 500, went solely to remote working. And then we had how many percent here? 26% allowed the employees the option to do remote working. That, of course, you saw that with the states and the universities too. They did that as well. So we're going to do another impact survey in the future here to find out if these businesses are going to continue to allow the employees to work remotely, because it will have an impact on, those decisions will have an impact on our real estate market. It won't be immediate, but it will be over time as leases come up and for renewals. So just something to keep in consideration as we move forward. When you look at our project activity and what our office is going to be focused on in the future, we're still fully focused on our targeted industries. Again, those are healthcare and applied science, manufacturing, and professional and IT services. So that's something that we're going to continue to focus work on. And we are still seeing activities as far as businesses from outside taking a look to see what our community has to offer. That's a combination of some of it's being, hey, you were always on our list, and now we have the time to have these conversations. And the other part of that is just our continued focused work with Magnetic Technologies and our partner in our contract with Research on Investment, or ROI. Our team is going to we're still working with Florida Makes to establish that regional manufacturing association. Our timeline has slowed down a little bit, but we're continuing to reach out to our regional manufacturers and having those conversations with them and combing through our funnel list with the Magnetic Task Force on referrals and recruitment opportunities. They had a meeting last week. Michael Tenenowski from Innovation Park sits on that task force. Thank you, Michael, for that, and provided an update on what that looks like. And then we know our IT sector is still hiring and looking to fill positions in that area too. So in short, our number one focus lately has been on supporting our local and small businesses, but we're still seeing interest in activity. Now, the big question out there is, what about Project Juggernaut? That project is still alive and is still, we're still working with that company. The decision timeline, we anticipated that to be now. Hopefully we would have had a conversation regarding that as a positive announcement. But their company has slowed down that timeline, and we now expect that to be at the end of the year. And that could be further delayed, at all depending on economic conditions from that. That being said, I'm also hearing conversations amongst my colleagues in economic development across the country about opportunities regarding onshoring for manufacturing. A lot of our U.S.-based companies have realized how important it is to diversify that supply chain. So what does that mean, and where can we as a community be a position to be competitively advantaged? We're working with our centers of excellence within the park to see if they have videos and tours virtually that we could do, so as we can still host interest meetings virtually as a first step. I think you'll see more people move along that line as a first initial checkpoint, and then when they visit the community, it becomes a little bit more of a serious conversation moving forward, even more so in the past. So that's some things that we are working on to the with the Magnetic Technologies Task Force as far as that goes. And then we'll take some other recommendations to the IA board about how to make sure that we're positioned digitally in a smart way to further engage interest from outside communities about expanding. And that also works locally here too, to help with businesses who are looking to expand locally as well. So it's a lot of information. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you for your support through everything. I don't think I've had an opportunity to address you since December, and I truly want to thank you for your help and your partnership on putting on working on that project Juggernaut. That was a huge project for our community. And I hope that by the end of the year, we can be have a positive update for you on that. But we won't know until then. And Ron and I stay in constant communication on that. And I do thank you for your support, and Michael as well, serving on the task force. So thank you.
Christina, we want to thank you for your leadership too, and thank you for updating us on Project Juggernaut. I know that there, even in this current environment, that there have been business interests in our local area. Can you talk about any projects or leads that we've been vetting along the way?
Yes, Kim. We had a few in bioagricultural and biotech is where most of ours are coming from outside of our ROI contract. Those are just natural connections that people are reaching out for. So those are things that we're seeing. One of those doesn't look like it's going to pan out very well. We had another community that had a similar experience, so we provided them with the information. It looks like they're just exploring potentials as they go through a growth phase within the next year or two. So, but the biotech companies have been pretty interesting, they're doing initial outreach right now and trying to figure out what different communities have to offer. We're seeing a lot of people try to do regional approaches to things, so we anticipate that will continue as well.
Thank you again. I think with just the level of uncertainty and everybody trying to get their footing back into whatever that new normal will be, we certainly will experience a slowness, if you will, in some of the decisions being made. Again, at this time, I would open the floor for any governors, board members, others who might have questions related to Christina's presentation. Okay, well then, Christina, you did a fine job. Oh, Ron, did you have a question? You're muted.
Yes, I did. Sorry, I was having technical difficulties. Multitasking. So, Christina, we've talked about, you know, what you guys are trying to accomplish. You've got the lead generation process going, and you've got staff now who can actually go out and sell. And obviously Innovation Park is, you know, and research in general is a centerpiece to what you're trying to market about Tallahassee and who you're going after. So what is it that Innovation Park needs to be doing to get ready for what it is you're doing? That's number one. And we heard from Rick Moore a little bit about some of the things we can do with the ground. But what can we do with offices? What things do you need from us? And secondly, what kind of marketing collaboration do we need to start working on going forward?
Great question, Ron. I think the most important thing is going to be a digital marketing plan and approach. That is that's what we're going to need together to develop, and that's some of the conversation that was had last week at the Magnetic Task Force. Specifically within that, because what's not going to change is what we're globally competitive in. Even if the real estate market crashes for some reason, what we remain globally competitive is in those assets that exist at Innovation Park. So stepping up a virtual marketing campaign, I think, would be very beneficial for all of us as we promote what we have here. And use that to grow forward. Support it. Having a regional manufacturing association too is also very important, because we can use that tool for manufacturers across the region, not only just to talk about how we can help them grow, but their workforce. And Kim knows that better than anybody. The ability to put all these manufacturers in a room and have a conversation about them, about the workforce that they need and how to move talent in and around there and train that talent in the future. So those are two things that are going to be very important for our community and our region as we move forward.
What about on the getting ready piece? What do you see us needing to have ready to make it, you know, when you get a hot prospect and we need to move forward, what do you need from us?
The ability to be able to put them in a site or in a building as quick as possible from that standpoint. And it will be important moving forward and showing them that they can begin building within 90 to 100 days of making a decision. That's all being quick, responsive, and ready is really going to be important. And having the talent to accompany that or the way or the means to develop that talent to accompany that will be important.
And on the, we talked about office configurations and things. So not every company is going to want to come in and build something right away. Some of them are going to want some office lab space configurations ready to go. What have you learned from your conversations with prospects about what kinds of spaces they might need?
It differs right now because before the pandemic, everybody was looking at more of an open environment. And now I think having those individualized offices and the separation of some space is going to be something that comes into consideration moving forward. So I anticipate that there's going to be a change in how those offices look moving forward on that piece. So maybe too early to tell on what that looks like.
Christina, probably just a follow-up question there. So I know that you're involved not only with statewide, but also on national with the site selectors and all. Are there trends, best practices, information, data that you think might be helpful in a rolled up kind of report so that we can kind of get this global perspective that gets drilled down to Florida as well? Just trends that we're seeing, you know, we went our past life and then now where we are now going back into the post-COVID. What does that look like? Is there any type of guidance or tidbits of information that can be shared that you come across?
Yes, and we are actively having those conversations as an industry too. The way the site selectors are doing business is changing. You know, when I talking to them, some of them, they haven't left their house and 4 months, some of them, depending on where they're located across the state or across the country, which is highly unusual. These people are used to being on the road 4 days a week. So they've had impact and changes to their industry as well. And what does that mean for us and how do we respond quicker and better to get their attention? So these are all conversations in this changing environment that we're having on a weekly basis together on that. But there is a good report that I can share with you, especially on how to have a virtual tour of your community and some of those that could be important.
Thank you again. And others, any other questions? Okay, absolutely. Right, you're recognized.
Need to unmute, Ray.
Unmute, yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
I was going to say that, thank you very much, Christine. I think that was very helpful. One of the things that you mentioned is that things are changing so much because of COVID-19. What's going to be in the future is like a crystal ball.
Right.
Why don't we go back to what Rick gave us was literally a checklist of things that we ought to be doing, being sure our documentation is all in place that would cut off that front 6 months of someone's timetable. And it seems to me that rather than trying to go through a development phase and go through doing anything other than just getting our ducks in a row, that seems to me is the most cost efficient and probably the most effective way of being better prepared.
Because Ray, you're absolutely right, because time is money to these companies. And if you have something that they can plug in and design the way they need it to their specifications. That moves you to the, and you got a workforce there that they can develop, that moves you to the top of the list really quickly.
And
sorry. Oh, absolutely. And you're recognized.
Mm-hmm. Also, in terms of this idea that there are going to be companies that are downsizing, having the ability to offer a really ready site, even if it's not maybe exactly what they might once have done, seems to me to have a lot of value. It's not going to be fun, whoever gets to go through all the ancient stormwater concurrency documents, permitting, you know, it's going to be work to make that happen, but I think we can make it happen.
Absolutely. You bring up a great point. April, did you have a comment you wanted to make as well? You're muted still.
I got you.
I just completely agree that we really need to take some action and begin taking steps towards this. And I appreciate having Rick and Christina here today to talk about this. So I just would love to see us move from just having the discussion to taking some real action.
Absolutely concur. And Kevin, you have a point to a comment to make prior to jumping in on that, but April and others, that's exactly what you're going to see. Part of what we'll do as a walk away take home exercise is our SWOT, individual SWOTs, by the next time we come back, so that we will then move forward with what our action plan will be. You're right. We absolutely need to move forward. Kevin.
So is it possible that we ask more VAS and maybe two or three other companies to take a look at it, providing us some updated information in terms of a proposal to really take a look at the property that's still under LCRDA's ownership, and then understand what do we need to do to move forward?
Absolutely. Ron, I think Rick, we wanted to make sure that we got the conversation going today with Rick. So Rick was our first one that came to the table. We'll certainly reach out, Ron, and I'll identify a couple of others that we can get that information and then share it back with the group. Ron, was there something that you wanted to say as well?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone that with Project Juggernaut, should that come to fruition, there are funds allocated in that deal to assist us with doing some of this kind of advanced work. Mm-hmm. So I think that there were two things. One was the land planning and geotech and pad ready site readiness, and the other was the marketing piece. So obviously there's a lot of room in that, but just keep that in mind. There could be some funds for that.
Thank you, Ron, for reminding us of that. And Christina, you have a point.
I just have one last thing to leave the group with, Kim, and that is the entrepreneurial aspect of all this and for the growth of our economy. You know, Michael has led some really great SBIR, STTR workshops over the past couple of months, and kind of home growing these entrepreneurships through the continued support of the innovation, North Florida Innovation Labs, I think is also going to be very important as far as growing our own larger companies in the future too. It's a nice way to continue to capture that talent, and I'm looking forward to finding out the results of the EDA grant application, because I do think that could be a huge game changer for supporting an entrepreneurial ecosystem within applied sciences, and as Michael likes to say, those hard sciences. So I think that's all going to be very key to moving forward. And then hopefully out of that, in 5 to 10 years from there, that'll give birth to larger companies, and we'll really start to see some changes in this area. So I think the two of these put together is a great path towards the future.
You're exactly right, Christina. And thank you for OEB's support there as well on the entrepreneurial front with the park. Other questions? Well, again, Christina, thank you so much for your leadership. Thank you for the information. Very informative. And we will certainly move out accordingly. Enjoy the rest of your day or hang around with us, whichever you like.
Thank you very much for having me. I have to move on to my next meeting.
It's your next now. Zoom session, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, I'm getting really good at this. I got the books positioned in the right spot in the back, and the kids stop breaking in now. So that's good, too. So.
Thank you, Christina. I really appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you again for your partnership.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, so we will jump back on to the agenda, but again, all great points shared by everyone involved. And the first, jumping back on that agenda, it takes us to approval of the draft meeting minutes, and I trust that you all have had an opportunity to review those. And if you have and there are no changes, I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second the approval of the meeting minutes for February 13th. All in favor, please acknowledge with aye.
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 Opposition? Okay, motion carries. Then we have for us the consent agenda, which includes not only some of our investment reports, but committee reports and a number of actions that who would have thought that even in a COVID environment, there'd be so many actions that your chair needed to take, but the work was done and that is what we have for you for consent. Please let us know if there are any items that you would want pulled. If not, then we will take on the entire agenda as presented for consent for your approval.
Motion to approve.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second for accepting the consent agenda as presented. All those in favor, please acknowledge with the sign aye.
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 Opposition? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you for that and for your work during this period. And then we have, again, as you'll see, this is a building block for where we go next and what action steps we need to take. So this also, the piece that I've asked Ron to present to you today is the financial forecast, looking at where we are, also driving some activity and interest on what areas of concern exist, and then we will open the floor for other conversations. So Ron, if you'll take it.
Sure. This is an update to the five-year forecast that we presented last year. Some of the facts have changed, but I'll just say that the general position has not changed. And the big driver of that is the $100,000 a year drop in lease revenue from FIPS starting after September of 2022. So you can kind of see, where we end up after that point. These are a lot of these intervening years, I think, with some of the revenue that Michael's been able to generate with grant revenue, some of those gaps could be filled. We still have space that we can fill. So you'll see some fluctuation in that. But we took a best guess at some of those things that could happen. I gave you some details in terms of lease schedules and capital projects. I even gave you a little cash flow to kind of see, where do we have a big cash problem. You can see that assuming that we get the EDA grant, and that you'll see that in this capital project schedule. So you'll see the two $900,000 payments in those 2 years. That's just a rough guess if everything comes out evenly. Along with these other projects, we kind of plug that in up here. And so you can see the cash flow, we can cover what we've got through the end of 2025. That's not a problem. Obviously, if we do anything else, absent of Project Juggernaut, which is not included in here, then we do have some limitations on resources, but we do have a substantial drop that's going to happen in those last 2 years. Now, something I did differently when you look at these assumptions from the last time is I assumed, and if Eric's still here, that Anthropology will continue to renew. I have not heard anything different, Eric. Have you, in terms of any plans on moving back on campus?
No, it's expected that they will continue, I think, for the foreseeable future. There's many moving parts that have to be moved and landed somewhere. for them to be able to actually move. And as far as I'm aware, none of that has started yet. So you could expect, what was the length of renewal that they wanted?
Well, we're doing right now. They've got 2 1-year renewal options. So I would expect at some point they'll probably want to come back and get a longer term renewal option and lock in their lease rates for some period of time. But and again, with COVID-19 and everything, I think a lot of moving around is probably going to slow down. But anyway, I just made that assumption because that's a significant number for us as well. If they were to move back on campus, that would be a substantial hit. So again, a lot of assumptions in this forecast, but I want to at least let you know what some of the major ones were. The National Park Service is renewed through 2025. That just happened in February. That's a good news. The bad news is they have an out. So if they ever decided to shut her down and move her someplace else, they can, at this point, they can do it with notice. So it's a pretty short term notice. But having said that, they've got a pretty large investment in what they've got in that facility, and that's sort of a deterrent to moving someplace else. And they did look about 6 years ago when they rebid this thing and found that it was cost prohibitive, not just in the investment they have, but just in the cost of transporting all of these artifacts is pretty large. So we did have Stephanie and I met with the folks at Park Service. And they are actually looking at the possibility of expanding again. Unfortunately, this was right before COVID-19, and the leadership is changing. I think David Morgan, who's been a longtime contact there, is moving on to something else, and his longtime assistant is retiring. So we've got some new leadership there coming in. And we'll have to reestablish our connections with them. Anyway, that's a major assumption there as well. Two of our largest revenue generators. And then we talked about Juggernaut. On the smaller side, just to let you know, I was going to tell you this in my report, but we did just do a deal thanks to Eric Holmes for some lease space in the Morgan building. So we, on the one hand, we lost the Center for Biomedical and Toxicological Research, which was about 3,000 square feet. But we gained the lab space in Morgan is now being leased by FSU. It's about a 600 square foot space and a 1300 square foot suite with 4 offices and some other space is being leased by them as well, all for COVID-19 testing. So this will be, it won't be any live virus testing, but we'll have the ability to support them and what they're doing with the testing of students. So I won't get into any more than that, but that's a great win for us. And we really appreciate Eric helping us to get that. So you can see some of these other assumptions. I'm not going to go into all of that, but that's kind of the big picture. The big picture is we're going to take some hits after 2022. We can squeak along for a couple years with what we know, and as I think April has mentioned in the past, this is the nature of leasing. You know, stuff turns over, comes and goes. You have opportunities you have to be prepared to take advantage of when they happen. And we do. The good news is we do have capacity that we can lease, both in the Collins building as well as in the Morgan building. So that's kind of where we're at. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have related to this 5-year forecast.
Ron, this is Ann. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This is kind of a stupid question. So Christina made some reference to 51 ongoing projects. I had no idea really what she was talking about. Didn't want to interrupt her. Is there anything that you know of that's going on with blueprint projects, gateway projects, anything that stands to really affect the park immediately if they are discontinued? Does that even make sense?
I'm not aware of anything at this point. I'm not sure what you're referring to, but
I don't know what I'm talking about either. I just, I can't quite figure out what this obvious dip in sales tax revenue is going to mean for Blueprint. In other words, how committed are those commitments that they have made, the things that are currently being constructed or started on or whatever, or is it just going to be a total reset? Do we have any idea? I don't.
Yeah, I don't. I think we had a conversation about their cash flow a little bit, the taxes they're going to be collecting. Obviously, a lot of that's driven, you know, it's driven by the sales tax and
right.
loss of retail and all of that. But we did discuss the EDA grant. They've got a $2.5 million match commitment on that. Should we get that EDA grant? They've got to come up with their dollars as they've got to fund it as it's needed. And so we've got that 2-year plan and she's trying to factor that in. So it's, yeah, I don't know what it means. It's, in terms of the number of projects, I think she's talking about total development projects around the city.
Okay, that sounds more like it. Yeah,
yeah, I don't think it's nothing. I don't think it's anything. It's not. I don't believe it's any active projects that they're working on, and they may have a few, but it's certainly not 51. I think right. those are just. I think those are just total development projects.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have Kristen's got her hand up.
Okay, Ron. Well, unless we need to leave it up, otherwise I can't see who has their hand up. So
let me unmute her. Oh, okay. She looked. Okay, Kristen.
I got it, Ron. I don't think we need to talk about this much, but I was just going to say in response to Ann's question that the infrastructure side, we may see a shift. That's my assumption. Just pushing projects to the out years. Or doing more bonding of projects, but OEV is really the place where we might see more of the programmatic impacts for funding reductions. I mean, they're already doing a lot of work to, as Christina said, transition to virtual marketing, things like that. I'm really impressed by the steps they've taken early on. So I think it's going to impact the two sides in different ways, but there is a strong acknowledgement that the infrastructure projects like the Gateway project will also bring jobs and help us get back to work and strengthen the economy. So I think we just see a shift in that depending on the sales tax reduction, not necessarily eliminating projects. That's my gut feeling.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, and we probably should have shared it too while Christina was here, but they've done a phenomenal job with reaching out and providing support for small businesses and inclusive of the nonprofit sector as well. So it's just been a tremendous job on that. So Ron, you have a comment?
Yeah, I want to add one thing. And again, I was going to add this in the report, but I think it's better to have it here. And that is kind of a status on the EDA grant. And, you know, I don't have any news, but we have had conversations with Greg Vidé. They are still asking questions. They have sent a document to Melissa to review, looking at the encumbrance of the property. She's having those discussions with their counsel, with EDA's counsel. And my takeaway from all of this is that they are getting closer, that you know, they're really getting into the weeds at this point. And it's not, particularly when you start getting legal counsel involved, they're not going to be spending that time and money on something they haven't really made at least a somewhat of a decision on. So I feel pretty good about that. I'm crossing my fingers and all of that and trying not to jinx this thing. But I feel like this could very well happen in a few months. I asked Greg directly if we were closer, and he said, "Yes, we were closer than we were yesterday." So that's the best I could get out of him. So, we're closer. So keep that in mind as we start looking at what we're going to be doing. Is if we get that, that's 2 years of work to build that building with a significant commitment of time on our part. So we've got that going. We've got the potential with the Juggernaut deal and the funds that that can generate. So there's a lot of stuff that's happening that, that could really change things. We have a prospect. I wouldn't even call it that. I call it a lead. I've got a lead for the Morgan building that I'm working on that could take a large amount of space there. And I'll let you know more once I get more information on that. But, you know, if that evolves, now we could potentially be out of most of our leasable office space as well as land pretty quickly, just in the snap of the fingers. Or we could be right where we're at. so that's kind of where we're at and how that all relates to the financials and as we start to look forward on strategic planning.
Other questions related to the finances? Okay, if there are none, then we'll segue down to the strategic planning discussion. And really, again, it's to plant the seed of where we go next, taking into account the unknowns. Ron sort of jumped into those unknowns right now because I wanted to almost do a data dump, if you will, of sharing what some of those could be. And yeah, Ron, I think we'll probably be good so that for the benefit of seeing the group,
because okay.
I lose the group. Yeah, I lose the group when we have the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. But for the whole idea of having that conversation, what are the unknowns that we should take into account? Because again, one of the things that I'm going to charge each of you with as we transition and close out the meeting would be to do your individual SWOTs, you know, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And it will be interesting in that we will compile that information. And as we come back to our second meeting or our next meeting, it would be to discuss that. You know, where are the common points? Where are we all on the same page with that? And, you know, where do we need to have further discussion or maybe even bring in other subject matter experts? Today's conversation is brought forward with Kevin and his suggestion, and certainly we'll move out on that. Through Rick's conversation, hey, why don't, as well as Ray's, you know, look at the readiness that we could have by way of the plan and take some actionable steps and figure out what those things are and start moving in that direction. Others have included Christina, where she's talked about the use of, you know, digital media and how do we incorporate that in, as part of our strategy too. There are a lot of things that we could be doing, but by golly, we need to be very strategic because there are limited resources and certainly limited time as well. So again, with saying that, the current unknowns, we've talked about three. Are there others that we need to be thinking about? Because again, land becomes an issue, building, whether we have some available for leasing, Juggernaut, big deal. EDA is a big deal as well. But are there other things that are just some of the challenges or concerns that we just haven't talked about that we need to be talking about? Keith, were you about to say something?
I was about to say something, actually. Okay. I just think that as we move forward with the strategic planning, you know, sometimes we lose sight of what the tenants might want. Mm. And I just think we kind of need to be focused on what makes a great facility, what makes a great campus location. What are some of the amenities that we might want to consider as part of the strategic plan? Because, you know, that feeds into recruitment, that feeds into retention, and then that just kind of feeds into our visibility as well.
You know what? I'm glad that I read your eyes. It looked as if you had something to say. So, and very good comment on top of that. So perhaps then a survey to just get a general sense, because they are our ambassadors and who others would speak to, other businesses who are looking at the area might speak to in regards to their experience with us. So we will note that as well, getting that general feedback. Any other thoughts? Anne, what about you?
Well, I always have thoughts, but
I know that's why I said
they're worth any different question. So this is a little off the wall, but how are things going at Innovation Park? There are people out there. You're in your offices. Peggy's in her office, I believe. Is there traffic out there? Are people using the trail? Does it look like a ghost town? Which is it?
It's a little of both. I'm actually working from home right now.
You got the background. Yeah.
Yeah, that's to fool you all to make you think I'm working.
Good job.
Oh, thank you. No, it's supporting the brand. Peggy goes in once a week to do, you know, get the mail and, you know, make sure we're not losing anything there. She also typically reports out on the status of the park and what, you know, what it looks like, what's going on. Right now, the Mag Lab is just a handful of folks. And Peggy, correct me if things have changed since the last time we spoke, but the Florida Department of Transportation, the Phipps building, they seem to have a full complement. Danfoss has a pretty full parking lot. I know, Sanjoy, you can weigh in on that in terms of what you all are up to, if you like.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, we are. We never shut down. Our production kept running. But we have taken a tremendous amount of precautions. So we have a task force. We're monitoring daily. We meet daily and monitor that. We are entering into reopening a very limited number. So we are bringing in 25% additional folks. As Christina mentioned, we are actually rethinking moving away from our open sitting area. So we are doing a lot of innovation to find and go through it. So my thought process was, as we figured things out, I would like to share with you, Ron. So if any lesson learned that what we have done, that we can share with all our neighbors and friends throughout the park.
Absolutely, we'd love to do that.
Sure, we have spent a tremendous amount of resources during this, and we have been very lucky. We have quarantined 41 folks, but no positive case, and we're doing our own testing and whatnot. So there are a lot of things, Ron. When you have some time, you and I, we can chat, and I can share what we have done.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
So that's just a great case in point. You know, it may be that one of the things that we have to offer between what FSU is going to do, what Danfoss is doing, is going to be part of the new rubric about how people are going to have to get back to work, since, you know, nobody thinks this is going away anytime soon. And, you know, we're going to have people who are actively involved in doing that, have had, you know, experience now in how to handle that. And that's an asset.
You know? So, and that's absolutely true. And I think that's a great idea, especially as we can get some local stories on what's going on. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I have spent, I spent 2 hours on a conference call yesterday with a local law firm that walked through all of the do's and don'ts of reopening your facility. They've got like a 30-page document that sort of gives you all of the information. And so it's mind-numbing how much work is involved. And I can relate, Sanjoy, but how much work is involved in reopening the building, because you have to think about, I mean, not just the employee welfare, which is top, you know, top issue, but, you know, making sure from an employer standpoint that you cover all the bases that you're required to cover, both with the CDC and OSHA. And so we're right now, my position is that, and we're going to talk with staff about this, you know, when does it make sense for us to go back, and what's the value to us? Right now we're maintaining the distancing. We're working from home. We don't see any great loss of productivity as a result of this. And the primary driver behind that is going to be the services, mostly the services that Michael provides. He's the more hands-on, face-to-face kind of right. person.
Right.
And then also the development of the, you know, the Collins incubator, because those are spaces that it's really hard to develop in this environment. And Michael's going to talk a little bit more about that when it's his turn, but you know, those are a lot of challenges to reopening. And so, yeah, if we can share that information with the other members of the park, I think it's useful. But having said that, the other members of the park are FSU, FAMU, the state, all of these folks have tremendous resources devoted to their planning.
Right.
They've got the legal, they've got the HR, they have all those resources. So I think it's probably going to be more of a matter of this, getting the supportive information out to the to the employees of those folks, and just, you know, reinforcing what the others are doing, what their plans are, and helping, you know, the best we can with that.
Yeah. Well, just one further thought as a lawyer myself, you know, there are law firms looking for at this as an opportunity to fill in their practices, and we're going to have to be very savvy about, you know, letting ourselves be tied up in knots with what you can't possibly do, what's a threat, be aware of it. But, you know, it's all, we have to look carefully at stuff like that, I think, and not just swallow it whole.
You're exactly right, Ann. I appreciate that. And Ray, any comments from you or Kevin that you would like to take into account? Because again, this is just clearly planting the seed for conversation, and then what you'll see in the email that comes out that talks about, here's what we identified as the unknowns as we perceive them now. You'll get shared the mission, vision, our priorities, just to review, so you'll have that all in one place. And then just a SWOT template, so that you all can, all of us can move forward with populating that and just getting a general sense of where everybody's thoughts are. But anything else that we'd want to share with the group before we move into the chair's report? Okay. Oh, Ray, Ron, if you'll unmute Ray.
Thank you. One of the things that I thought about when Rick was talking about in his presentation, based on the 600 acres around the airport for development, where is the airport in that process? Ron, do you know? And are discussions going on with the airport relative to what they're doing and what we want to do and potential partnerships there?
I've not had any further conversations with them since the COVID-19 started. I don't know if Kristen or the mayor have more information about what's going on there.
Mayor Daley, are you there?
I got you unmuted, sir.
I'm here.
Okay.
Great.
I'm here. I haven't been able to raise my hand because I'm not on virtual. But
You are everywhere. Thank you for your leadership.
Could you repeat the question then for me real quick?
Sure. We're just trying to get an update. Ray asked regarding the airport and just any activity out there with regard to the land.
Sure. Well, as Rick Moore mentioned, we're actually doing the tabletop exercise. You know, he mentioned that as a potential great way to get your land prepared specifically for development. We're going as far as trying to get it pad ready. That exercise has been going on now for nearly a year. And so we're uncovering all the hurdles now so that when we do have interest in the airport, we're ready to rock and roll. So what Rick was saying about Innovation Park, we're a solid, I wouldn't say a year, I'd say about 9 months into that process right now, specifically at the airport. It was mentioned about what are the projects that could positively impact or even potentially negatively impact the park. Obviously, the airport gateway is a big one that I'm very excited about. I agree with Kristen. I think depending on the financial situation, there won't be a complete turnaround on projects. They'll just be pushed out a little bit. But of course, everybody, I believe, is committed to working together for the most positive outcome that we possibly can get. With the airport itself, we've restructured the advisory committee. Each commissioner has the opportunity to appoint directly to the airport advisory committee now, and then I will be submitting an additional four names for ratification to the city commission. I don't believe, because of everything that's going on, that is on this agenda, but those recommendations have been made, and I believe it will be placed on the next city commission agenda. So what you will see is a streamlined airport advisory committee. We have a lot of behind the scenes, the non-sexy planning, everything from stormwater to land use to making sure that when the federal government gave us the land way, 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 way back when to build the airport, there's nothing in the title that prevents us from doing certain things. We're doing all of that right now with our tabletop exercise. So there's actually a lot going on at the airport right now. On top of that, the normal daily operations of what's going on. So, good things to come.
Thank you, Mayor. That was very comprehensive and actually gave us insight as to, as we go down that path, what timeline we should anticipate. Questions related to
the Madam Mayor? Chair?
Yes.
Chair, I have Dave Ramsey on the phone on speaker in my office, and he has actually been present for most of the meeting. He just didn't know he was here with me, but he is, and I believe he would like to speak.
Absolutely. You're recognized, Dave.
Yeah, well, again, I don't know whether you're with the airport discussion, but and I don't know what the funds you'll bring up in discussion with regard to the forgery of checks or counterfeit checks that were presented against our account. But being a banker and being the chair of the audit committee, I follow that pretty closely. And I really do want to compliment the way that Ron jumped on this thing, found out about it even before the monthly statement was rendered. Did everything exactly like we were supposed to have done, and we have probably mentioned this or will, but we've recovered every penny of that potential loss. So, Ron, a job well done. Thank you for your diligence and being on top of it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I will talk about that more in my report.
Thank you, Dave, for recognizing that, because many of you may recall, and you probably got the emails as well from Ron alerting us of what had occurred, and you're like, wow, you know, what's going on? But quickly, with police reports and everything else, we were able to get it done, and also our banking partner as well. They were all very good in that effort. So, again, thank you for, Ray.
Madam Chair, let me ask one thing. Based on the mayor's comments about the airport and a lot going on and their tabletop exercise with regarding to development properties, I would strongly encourage you, Ron, to re-engage in that conversation, because it seems to me that it's at a very pivotal time, both for us and for the airport, to have conversations about what they're planning on doing with their property, what we might want to do with ours, and to be sure that we are complementing each other in our movements forward. So I just encourage you to go back and re-engage with the folks out there.
I will do that.
Absolutely noted as a great idea, and I'll put that on our agenda as well, Ron, when you and I speak. But yeah, absolutely moving out on that. Were there other comments that we wanted to capture? Okay. Again, strategic planning discussion, you'll have that information sent out to you. If you all would respond accordingly, we will make sure that we can move in that direction. We'll move down to the chair's report. Just a couple of items there, some board seat openings, one of which I'm staring at my colleague now. I certainly don't like to see that transition, but April, her term of service will be concluding, and we try to buy her a yacht or something of that nature, but nothing that could lure her into coming back. So she has served and served well. I can't think of anybody else, you know, just in that seat but April. But so that is one spot, and April will certainly want to offer some comments there. We'll allow her to do that. And there's a couple of other. The other is related to a spot that Dave currently holds, and I'm certain that we would have to pry that out of Dave's hand. So we're certain that he'll want to submit once again. And then the other, Sanjoy, we wanted to, I know that you have been serving as well, but wanting to confirm your continued interest.
That is correct.
Okay. And April, we'll turn the floor over to you.
I just want to say thank you. It's been a privilege to serve with everyone. I appreciate the hard work of the staff. We have an amazing staff, and I just feel like I'll have a lot of irons in the fire right now between Mexico Beach and my business and some other opportunities that I'm pursuing, and I just really need to focus on those. So I very much appreciate the opportunity to serve. I thank the County Commission for their support of my terms, and I look forward to seeing the tremendous success that I know Innovation Park will achieve. So thank you.
Well, April, you have definitely been a contributor and driver for all of that. So we could not have done it without you. Your service is appreciated. So what information we'll have to put forward, I think it's July, Ron, that it would actually go before the County Commission. Is that correct?
Yes, and they continuously accept applications on the county website. We have posted that on social media, and we've already received some inquiries, including from a prior board member. And So all they have to do is go on the county website and apply. Dave and Sanjoy will both have to go back and reapply for the position. And then they will form a nominating committee based on the requirements in the ordinance, and they will meet, I believe, in July, so that they can get it into a September county commission meeting.
Okay. Again, so thanking everybody for their service and for those that have continued interest in serving. So lots of good things that we have to work on. The next item is board seat openings. And I tell you, as everybody will probably look away and I won't get anybody's eye contact via Zoom, but.
Oh, you mean the officer seats?
Yeah, the officer seat. I'm saying that's why I won't get any eye contact and everybody's screen will be black. But for the chair and vice chair roles, so both myself, Eric and I will have served a year. I know it's been customary that folks will look at serving at least a couple of years, but we did want to put that out there because it is the body that makes that decision on service. So that time will be coming and coming up.
And a treasurer with
April. April leaves so many holes. Oh my gosh. No, but yes. We will have to look at that officer role too. So I would ask if there is interest in serving in either of those roles, we would most certainly appreciate it. And if you share your interest with Ron, but we will have that as an upcoming agenda item. And again, just wanted to put that out there for service and not heavy lifting, but certainly a focused commitment on getting the work done of the park, and everybody's done that already. So it would not be a big lift for you all. To that end, I will jump into the staff reports, and if we could kick that off in the order that they're presented, and keeping in mind that we are nearing, a point that we'd like to conclude, and we don't have to go up to the published time. So, okay, Ron, take it away.
Yeah, and fortunately, I've already given most of my report. We have, the bank fraud. That was the one thing I just want to elaborate on a little bit. So Dave mentioned it. You should have all received an email. We were able to catch it with our current controls. We caught it by the time they had submitted two false checks and one electronic transfer. We were able to track it down and identify who, some of the culprits were. We provided all the information to the county sheriff. And at this point, it's kind of out of our hands. Hancock Bank was able to reverse one of the electronic charge and the two checks they reimbursed us for. So we followed all their procedures to get reimbursed, and we were grateful that they took care of that for us. Reconciling your accounts quickly at the end of the month helps. So if you don't do that on your own stuff, I highly recommend it. It works. So basically what they were doing, just so you know, is they were making copies of existing checks that I had signed that they had taken from one of our vendors and altering the checks to make them payable to themselves at a different amount. And it was pretty obvious when we got them that they weren't ours. So we took care of that. That's all good. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is we did have a development review committee meeting. You have a report in your packet. But FSU is doing a second phase expansion of the CAPS facility. If you recall, a couple of years ago, they started one in the back of the Research Foundation A building. They're adding to that footprint. They're just doubling the footprint of that expansion. And so that should, I'm not exactly recalling the timeline, but you're probably talking a year to 2 years for that whole project to complete. But and that's all I have. Oh, I did have one more thing. If you didn't hear, this is not really critical, but we did have alligators in the pond. To answer your question, and I don't think there's been a lot of traffic on the pond, but the alligators kind of like it that way. So we worked with Melissa to understand our liability related to alligators and what options were available to us in getting rid of them. So we understand now that there's a state program that if they're more than 4 feet long, that they can remove them for us. So we'll just, after we found the one, we found three babies. So we'll have to wait for them to grow up before we can remove them. So anyway, that's taken care of, and we put signs up, beware of wildlife and alligators and snakes. And so I think we've covered all of our bases. So that's all I've got.
Ron, did we also share the Knight Foundation award? Because, of course, we received
Michael's going to talk about that.
Oh, okay, then I won't steal his thunder then.
Okay.
Michael, great transition.
Yes, well, thank you. I have given a report that's included in your packages, but I did want to highlight three individual things, one of which is prospects. Believe it or not, during the COVID-19 problems we're having, I got one new virtual member. That member is EduClear. It's an education software program. They're also a grant finalist, and they participated in the SBIR STTR accelerator that OEV funded. So as a result of those efforts, they've become, as of May 1st, a virtual member. Also have a very good prospect that I'll be meeting with on site on the 9th of this month. It is a new resident member application that I'll need to send out to our advisory board, but that is called Blue Quench, and it's a cooling technology that's very interesting. You can take lukewarm liquids and have them cooled within 60 seconds to basically the chill of ice. So they could cool it down to ice chill in 60 seconds. They want to take advantage of FAMU FSU's College of Engineering as far as internships. They want to take advantage of the proximity to Danfoss for the cooling technologies. And they want to be close to both universities for other than internships, engineering assistance as well. And they're looking to take their injection molding application and do manufacturing there eventually. And they need help with some getting some production tolerances rather than prototyping tolerances done. So I did actually mention some programs at TCC. They're very interested in that as well. And so I think it's just the perfect prospect for us. They're coming out of Destin Beach, and they found us by doing a general search, and they saw that we were on the SBIR STTR site from SBIR.gov. So that's going to be a very, very good one. Just so you know, since I'm on prospects, all four of our virtual members are on our site now, so you can see who's there. That includes Persica, Access Biotech, EduClear, and New Energy. So that's been going pretty well despite not being there. So happy about that. On the grant side, we have $105,000 worth of grants in play with FAMU Reach. I've been working with David Teague over at FAMU to do the second seminar on SBIRs, which will be happening September 16th. If it needs to be virtual, we'll do it that way. He's good with that. If it needs to be in person, which I prefer, hopefully we'll be open by then and we can do that. The OEV SBIR Accelerator Program went over quite well. We had nearly 20 participants interested. I couldn't handle the 20 for the first cohort. That's before I knew it was going to be online. So we moved six of them to the second cohort, which they were comfortable with, which will be happening in August. Out of the 13 that were accepted into the first cohort, 10 completed the full program. And those 10 met the requirements of OEV conditions in our grant. So that went over quite well. And again, EduClear was one of the 10 who now became a virtual member. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do. So that's working out well. We have a small grant with DOMI that, because of leadership transition, nothing has been done with that grant. Now that DOMI announced a new leader in Bill Lixon, I'll be able to connect with Bill since I know him. And I've reached out to him about seeing where we are with the DOMI grant. Basically, it's a $15,000 grant to do one, possibly two workshops on SBIR STTRs for one of their programs. It's a module insert on SBIRs that I'll be doing. You probably all heard about the Knight Foundation grant. Knight Foundation awarded us $35,000 to provide lab equipment and essentials. I've been seeking advice from folks that work in the lab, including our anchor tenant in Cori Bio, and they've given me suggestions on what to get. I've worked with Eric Holmes as well, and I put out an inquiry to Mark Long over at Sid Martin Biotech Center, who's given me some information as well. So we're going to make the, we received the money, and we'll be making a purchase once I finalize what everybody thinks they want for shared resources. Couple of comments I got already is that that would have been quite attractive when recruiting companies in to see some of that equipment and supplies in place, glassware, centrifuge, autoclave, chillers, things of that nature. So that's what I'm working on. And hopefully by the time we reopen, we'll have that equipment in place and ready to go. Also, I'm working on several other grant applications with FAMU. I have a NASA grant, part of their SPARC grant, which is $102,000 for us, part of an I-Corps proposal that they're preparing, which is another, I think it's $15,000 there. And then I just worked with folks at HPMI to help out on a grant with NSF to do some more SBIR training, probably $5,000 a shot for one course in SBIR. And I'm working with them on that now. So prospects was one, grants is two. And then since I always talk about SBIRs, I thought that would be my third highlight. Interestingly enough, I have 10 active SBIR application folks that I'm working with. Of those 10 active ones, five have already been accepted by the NSF project pitch. I just got another one this morning that said that they were invited to do full proposals. And so I'm working with those, three of which are virtual members. One was a recommendation from one of my advisory group members who's a angel investor and part of a small, I'll call it institutional investor, not quite a VC firm. And so I thought that would be worth working with. And then the others I've worked with either in the past or they're as a result of being students in the first cohort. So there's, again, 10 active SBIR reviewing participants I've been working with. So if anyone has any questions, happy to answer those. It's been quite active in our COVID-19 stay-at-home process. I don't think there's a day that goes by that I haven't entertained someone's review of someone's SBIR proposal or enhancing it and then giving them feedback. And I'm happy to see those five have been accepted so far. And I anticipate more coming.
Great job, Michael. Great to hear how all of this is connecting and just the impact that we're making both for other companies, but also for the park and the dollars that you're bringing in to expand our services. That's great.
Well, thank you.
Ron, you had a comment?
No, not on that. I just want a chance to introduce Naomi.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Our newest face to the park. So Ron, please take it away.
Yeah, I was going to do this at the beginning and got lost in all the technology. Yeah, we just want to welcome Naomi Molina to Innovation Park and to LCRDA. She comes to us from WFSU. I believe we shared information about her when we hired her, but this is her first chance to join us. She has jumped right in a very difficult situation. She started, I think, 2 or 3 weeks before we shut down the office, and has been getting to know us virtually. So it's been really interesting, and we're really excited to have her. She's been a great addition. So we look forward to working with her in the future.
Absolutely.
So, and she does have some stuff to report on too, by the way.
I know. She's been very active, even in this short tenure. So Naomi, if you would proceed with your report.
Yeah, thank you. It's so nice to meet you all, and I'm looking forward to working with you in the future. Just a few updates for me. The Knight Foundation grant, you know, big news that was published by the Tallahassee Democrat and also got picked up by statewide Enterprise Florida newsletter, which was really great. So shared that on social media. We had a lot of engagement about that and a lot of reshares and stuff, which is really exciting. Our first virtual tech topics on the calendar. That'll be Wednesday, July 29th. That's going to be at 11 a.m. on via Zoom, and that's going to be a first virtual one. So excited about that, and you know, hopefully that all works out. And from my understanding, most times people who attend these events are people who are working in the park. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to get a bigger reach and cast a wider net with our audience for this one. Our speakers are going to be Rebecca Sweat and Tariq Dickens from the College of Engineering, talking about their research, and marketing for that will start in a week or two, since we still have a month and a half ish until the event. Social media update: I'm really trying to be active on all of our platforms. Since February, or end of February when I started, all of our platforms have seen a pretty big increase in followers. Facebook and Instagram have been the most. They've had over 100 followers increase since then. And the rest have all had, a good amount as well. I do several posts a week on all of our platforms. Currently, I'm doing a social media campaign for the incubator on virtual memberships. I'm doing them every Monday and kind of calling them Virtual Membership Mondays and highlighting the benefits of the virtual membership. So that started last Monday, the 25th, and that will continue on for 5 weeks or so. And then during that time, I'm going to send out an email, one or two emails that are to our contact list solely about the virtual membership. So to highlight those as well in this time. And then lastly, as y'all know, our tech grant has been rescheduled to October. And official press release and marketing for all that will start in around August to kind of amp it up a little bit before, before the event. So I'm really excited about that and looking forward to being part of it. So me today.
Naomi, again, you have been very busy in this short tenure. We appreciate all of your work in expanding our reach with all the different social media platforms and also engaging the Democrat and others with telling our story. So we thank you for that. And
thank you.
Are there other comments? Ron? Oh, April.
Wait, Matt, let's unmute you, April. Hold on a second here. For some reason, we're not unmuting. Hold on. April, there we go.
Okay. I would just like to encourage the board, as you look at the Facebook page and the various social media platforms, the way that the algorithms work is that the more people like and comment on their posts, the more exposure that they get and the more mm-hmm. people see it. So even if you can just, if you're on Facebook or you're on some of these platforms, just engage in any way with the Innovation Park social media, and it will help a lot. It's if you can get 5 or 10 people liking a post, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you can double or triple the eyeballs that you get on it. And if no one comments, no one sees it. It's yep. kind of this chasing your tail thing.
Yeah, so that's a great point. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Naomi, if you would you mind sharing just the channels that we have out there available, sharing it with the board members so that they'll have a, I know you've mentioned Facebook and Instagram, but
we have Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Those are the four. Yeah.
Okay. And possibly in the communication that we send out to the board, we'll just include that. Thank you again for everybody's attention, because I tell you, it's been so interesting with all the Zoom. Oh, Ron. Yes, go ahead.
Stephanie is still on the agenda, I think.
I'm sorry. I didn't see. You know what? Stephanie. You know what, Stephanie, you put that hand up, I will see it. you're a quiet contributor, but Stephanie, please do.
I just wanted to say about Naomi, I've been noticing, because obviously I'm on Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. you are doing such a great job. I see Innovation Park at almost every, the different, it just keeps coming up, Innovation Park, no matter which one I'm Thank on. You. And every time I see it, I'm like, oh, this is wonderful, and Thank I make you. Sure to ask my family, like this, so we're all liking it. So anyway, I noticed that. But on to my report, I just wanted to let you guys know, just give you some updates on how your buildings are faring during being mostly empty during COVID-19. So I was there. I do an inspection once a week, a thorough inspection. Our maintenance person does it as well. As you guys know, when you have vacant areas that are vacant for weeks at a time, you have to go into all the nooks and crannies. I mean, there could be leaks. There could be, you just don't know because they're virtually vacant. So we're making sure that we keep an eye on all of that, taking care of any maintenance issues, but also balancing the buildings with HVAC. Because if you don't do that, you could have mold issues, you could have bowing ceiling tiles with the humidity and all of those things. So we're monitoring all of that. When I keep in constant contact with our tenant contacts, our main tenant contacts for all the buildings, to make sure that everything's ready for when they come back. Right now, the general consensus is everybody should start returning by the end of this month. So that's their plan. So by the end of this month, we should, knock on wood, have most of our tenants back in and working. And so in the meantime, we've done things that we normally can't do around people, such as painting projects and things like that. Since there's not a lot of people around, we can do those things during work hours. And I've just been using our little maintenance guy to his full extent. So he's been working his behind off during this time. We've also posted signs everywhere, social distancing, just wash your hands, you know, all the break rooms, entrances, restrooms. So we've posted laminated signs everywhere. And in the process of putting up, I'm trying to get my hands on hand sanitizer dispensers. It's been very difficult. But I'm hoping that one of our tenants, Eric, with BioQuarry, thinks he can get us some. And I have been purchasing hand sanitizer from him, one of our tenants, for my other buildings as well. So kind of trying to keep it in the park. And then lastly, just to wrap up, I've been working with Jonathan Dennis. He's the Department of Biological Science to do the small build out for the lab for 140 and with Eric Holmes. And so that actually will be completed on Friday. All of the work will be done on Friday. And then Jonathan Dennis, per Jonathan Dennis, he's saying that they'll start moving equipment in next week. And then if there's any other little wrinkles we need to iron out, we can do that at that time. But the majority of everything will be totally complete and ready to go this Friday. So that about wraps my report up.
So PPE related items, we know that a lot of businesses have just been trying to figure and get them in their own back order. I know TCC has the same issue that we're trying to do as we prepare for our phase reopening. Any challenges as we prepare for, it looks like the tenants coming back?
So I have spent some time taking some classes on what everyone else is doing in the commercial industry to be ready to open back up, you know, CDC guidelines, OSHA and all that good stuff. So what we're doing for, I manage another building and I've had about 300 employees in this building. It's a DBPR, where DBPR is located off of Old St. Augustine and Blairstone. So the companies themselves are providing their own tenants with the PPE. But myself as a property manager, I'm taking care of all the common areas. And it would be the same thing as all of our other buildings at Innovation Park too. It's our responsibility for our common areas, you know, according to the lease. So that's why for us, I'm required to wear a face mask per TALCOR procedures. And then to make our tenants feel a little bit better, we're providing the hand sanitizer and signage. Other than that, that's all we're doing.
If I can chime in on that, part, we are, and again, I went through my own seminar yesterday. That's part of what we're going to be looking at in putting together our own plan is what specifically we're going to cover. But she's right. Our primary focus, in addition to our own staff and our own areas for our staff in the Collins building, we'll be looking at the common areas in other buildings. So each building, and this was a big thing on the call yesterday, which is every building, every employer is kind of unique in the way they need to respond to this. So that's part of what we're looking at is how, you know, what do we need to do? What are we required to do? You know, where are the potential legal liabilities? Those sort of things. So I've got a lot of information coming on that. So we're still working on that plan.
Ron.
Okay.
That concludes my report.
Okay. I was looking, trying to scope around to see if there were any questions, because the next item, because I did actually pull that agenda up on my other laptop that you can't see, so I'll stay on script. There you go. It would be helpful, even though it's the last item, but new business, if there is any. Okay, so now I officially go into thank you so much for your time today, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day, and we're going to move to an adjournment. Thank you all. Stay safe and be well.
Thank you, everyone.